and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast on Managing the Impact of Change for Embedded Software for the Aerospace and Defense Market. Today's speakers are Ido Sarek, Vice President of Testing Solutions at Wind River, and Moshe Cohen, Offering Manager at IBM Rational. My name is John McHale, Editorial Director of Military Embedded Systems Magazine, and moderator for today's event. The event will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. There are three buttons to take notice of on the large slides buttons on your console. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides full screen. You can also click the Forward to a Friend button to send an email of request for this event. You also find on your console window a button that enables you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address them during the closing Q&A session, but if you have a question intended for a specific speaker, please note so at the beginning of your question. Otherwise, I'll hand out the questions equally to our speakers. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the eCast. Note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all your questions today. In that case, someone will get back to you after the eCast with more information. And also, please note that this eCast will be posted online today, and an audio podcast will also be available. There will be more details at the end. I'm pleased to introduce our first speaker, Moshe Cohen of IBM Rational. Moshe?
Okay, thank you, John, and welcome, everybody. Well, today we would like to talk to you about a joint offering between IBM Rational and Wind River Systems that will allow you to better manage change and improve quality in your A&D projects. First, let's talk about the challenges that we are facing, then talk about some strategies for systems and software delivery, and then the bulk of the presentation will be around the best practices that are enabled by this joint solution. So here we'll go more a bit deeper, a bit more technical, and then we will look at the overall impact from a return on investment point of view. Starting with the challenges, you are all familiar with the V model. We will not go into the details, but the point that we want to make here is that at the beginning of a project, we are making some assumptions on what is going to be delivered, at what cost, what quality level, how long it is going to take, so we have some planned business outcome. We go through the whole development phase, usually with outsourcing and so on, we get at the end, and the result is not exactly as we expected. So this creates a gap between the planned business outcome and the actual business outcome. And this gap has many implications, including cost. For example, in 2007, cars were delivered to customers with non-functioning wiper systems. Each of the subcomponents was perfectly fine, but when we put all the pieces together, they just didn't work. In 2010, a helicopter drone was flying autonomously towards Washington, D.C. Not really something that you want to happen. In fact, this was addressed as part of the requirements, and it was supposed to land safely, but this piece of functionality did not really work. Another case in 2010, Cisco bug crashed 1% of the Internet, and there are many implications to this. So complexity has its problems. In fact, when we try to figure out what is really happening, here we see an example from automotive, but we see this in many other industries. Definitely we see this in A&D, where we have many subcomponents that are very software intensive, that form a system. In this case, it is a car, but the car is part of a larger system, or what we call systems of systems. In fact, the term systems of systems came from A&D. And this then creates a high level of complexity and unknown usage models that makes the testing very challenging. But the truth is that it is not all bad news, because some companies figure out how to manage this complexity and how to adjust the development process accordingly so that they actually exercise greater profitability. In fact, you see on the right side what they experience. And this really speaks for the fact that good system engineering really offers a lot of opportunity for greater profitability. However, poor system engineering practices are very costly. And if we try to see why, where is really, or what is causing the cost, what we see is that the top challenges are in meeting schedules. Others are the debugging process because of the increased complexity and the unknown usage models, and then we get into surprises. Increased lines of code, complexity of the code, basically it reflects again complexity of the overall application. And this then drives, as a consequence, poor consistency in software delivery, meaning that we plan to deliver in a certain time and we deliver later. We plan to deliver in a certain cost, and this is not the cost. Unplanned bug fix releases, which we all hate, especially management. Poor customer satisfaction. Litigation risks, that's an interesting one. Would you believe that the cost of litigation today is higher than cost of software development? We already got into this point. Well, how do we deal with this? So there are two extremes. One is schedule-driven, where what we say here is that we have to deliver on time, well, as long as it works. Right, it is working more or less. Let's go and deliver this. You can do this once, twice. You can really do this when features are more important than the quality and the reliability. But what is happening here is that effectively you are turning your customer into a tester. That is not a long-term winning strategy. The other extreme is quality-driven. And what we say here is that we are going to deliver with zero defects. So we are going to work on improving the quality until it is really perfect. Well, while this is really a great wishful thinking, it is not really realistic, not economical. And you never know, really, if you don't have any more bugs. So do we have something else in between? And what we claim is that if you look at your project from a risk point of view, then you probably want to deliver when you have the minimal risk exposure. So since we talk about risk, what is risk? Risk is really the probability for a loss multiplied by how big this loss is. You know, loss can be measured in many different ways, financial loss, your reputation, loss of future prospects. And of course, what you want to do is calculate this across all different sources of risks. Okay, so initially what we have is, as we work on our project, initially we have many defects, and these are heavy defects with bigger implications. Well, this is normal. Then we go through the development process, we go through the testing process, and then over time we have less defects, and even those defects that are left there are not defects that have a heavy size of the loss. So this is normal. However, as time goes by, there is another curve that is going up, this red curve, that represents opportunity cost as well as competitive risk. So initially we have low opportunity cost and weak competition, but over time this red curve is going up. So if we want to talk about minimal risk exposure, what we need to do now is add up these two curves, these two risks, and now you get into this dashed blue line. And this blue line has a minimal point. This minimal point is really the inflection point where if you go beyond this point, and the increase in the risk due to competitive threats is getting higher, bigger than whatever savings you can get by further improving quality. So if you went any further, yes, you're going to clean a few more defects, but the risk is getting much higher. So you probably do not want to go beyond this point, and this is probably the place where you want to go and release your product. Let's take a look at this from different industries' point of view. Let's think about consumer electronics. Let's assume that you are Sony or Samsung or Toshiba, where there is a lot of competition, very competitive. So the red curve is moving up. And as a result, what you see is that the right time to market is moving to the left. You have to release your product earlier with, in quotes, a higher amount of defects, but this is still your lowest risk point. If we look at other industries where there are safety critical, we have this in A&D, we have this in medical, then the green curve is the one that moves up because of the criticality of defects, which moves the time to release, the lowest risk point, it moves it to the right. So it does make sense. Now, what are best-in-class companies doing? They do release in their minimal risk exposure point. Because if you look at this, the red curve really represents market dynamics. This is not in your control. You can't really affect the red curve. But the green curve is one that represents how you manage your risk. For example, if you're always going to deal with highest risk items first, get them out of the way, fix them, then you deal with the next highest risk item and so on, in effect, what you're going to do is you're going to squeeze the green curve down and to the left. By squeezing it down and to the left, the intersection point moves to the left and again down, which means that in order to deliver earlier without hurting your quality, in fact, with increased quality, what you need to do is to continuously lower your risk. So if you lower your risk continuously, this will actually allow you to deliver earlier with higher quality. And that's really what best-in-class companies are doing, and we saw before what they're experiencing as part of the project. Okay, so how do you do that? The first thing that you have to be very aware of is that the testing team cannot infuse quality in a bad product. You have to extend this into a quality management perspective. And in fact, if we look at the industry today, most of the industry is really focused on test automation. But what we need to do is take a wider perspective and move into collaborative quality assurance and from there into quality management. And you see up on the top what are the different aspects of each of these. So as you move to quality management, you are becoming much more collaborative in nature. You start being more proactive. Then you deal with prevention of defects. And then you optimize your overall process. It is not just your testing process. It is your development process. Again, we have to realize that the testing team or QA team cannot fix, they can measure quality, but they cannot really infuse quality into the product. And for this, you have to have a much broader view, which is really what we are going to discuss here. So again, here we see the V. The testing is on the right side of the V. In fact, if you talk about an agile process, you have testing pieces in each iteration as well. So what we need to do is extend beyond the testing phase and beyond the testing team. And when you go and you execute your testing, you want to execute it where it matters the most. It does not always make sense, or it is not always the most economical to run all the test cases that we have just because we have them. You want to be able to pinpoint exactly which test to run, and then when you have a defect, you want to be able to go all the way down as if you have full visibility into your source code, even if you don't, and really be able to debug it in the most effective way. So, how does the joint solution look like? It is really an end-to-end solution, where first you want to be able to take all different types of testing, starting from unit tests to software integration tests to software hardware integration to acceptance tests to system validation, and deal with this as if it is one project. The reports should be consolidated. The debugging capabilities should be the same regardless of where you are. You want to be able to debug as deep as you need at any stage or at any type of testing. So you want to take all different aspects of testing and deal with them as if it is one testing challenge, one testing project. But that's not enough. What you also want to do is link all of this to the left side of the V, to link this to your requirements, to link this to your system modeling and detail design, to be able to use defect management. You may be familiar with the tools that are used in this space. So for example, with requirements engineering, it is mostly DOORS. DOORS is a de facto standard in AND. RTC or ClearQuest, and the ClearQuest are products that are used for defect management to enable a smoother collaboration between the different stakeholders and so on. So the important point here is that you want to really link all the different aspects of testing, which are on the right side of the V, you want to link them to the different activities that you have on the left side of the V. So let's go deeper. The tool that we are that is part of this solution here is Rational Quality Manager, that is really used as a centralized quality hub with full lifecycle support across all different types of testing. So it links on one hand to the requirements management tools like DOORS. Then it allows you to go through your quality management process, which is defining your test planning, the test strategy, defining the different test cases. Then it will pass it on to the Wind River solution for detailed definition of these test cases and test steps and so on, and then create consolidated reports so that you and your management and their management can really have full visibility into the status of your defects, and then goes into defect management. As a solution, it is an open solution that links to different products, and today we are going much deeper into the integration with Wind River. Let's talk a bit about the Wind River solution. Ido?
Thanks, Moshe. So let me give you a similar big picture view of Wind River Test Management. Wind River Test Management is an automated framework that's designed from the ground up to address the needs of embedded system software. It provides a universal, open test execution engine that can run any test, Perl scripts, compiled C code, Python scripts. It can run them either on the target board itself or in a hosted target remote mode. It also provides a comprehensive lab management system that enables you to search for specific devices, possibly located in remote, geographically dispersed labs, reserve them for your use, for your exclusive use in testing, and even schedule the test execution on them, including an uploading of the desired target binary image that needs to be tested. And most importantly, Wind River Test Management provides runtime diagnostic information by instrumenting in runtime optimized binaries that are running in the device. And we'll talk more about this particular capability later on in our presentation. Together with Rational Quality Manager, this makes for a complete end-to-end quality management system that integrates with requirements management, integrates with defect tracking, and provides an optimized solution for the needs of testers of embedded systems, particularly in the A&D space. Now let's turn to a more in-depth discussion of the various best practices enabled by this joint solution. Moshe?
Sure. Okay, the first one, we just talked about the need to collaborate. Well, when we have large programs with many different stakeholders, and we are distributed geographically through different time zones, it is really key to be able to collaborate effectively. And the collaboration is not only in terms of understanding the requirements or design, it is also in terms of your testing, how you're going to do your testing, who is going to do which test, which test bench is going to use for each of these tests and so on. So it is very important to have all the different stakeholders involved so that they can together define the test strategy, the test plan, the test details, who is going to do what, when. Obviously, these tests must be requirement-driven. They must be linked to the requirements, and we're going to talk more about this in the next two slides. It is also very important to enable collaborative testability. Okay, you may be familiar with the term design for testability. What are the things that you need to do in your design during your implementation stage to enable testability later on? So this is a collaborative task where both developers and testers need to collaborate and figure this out. In fact, as you do your test planning, it is also very important to be able to identify the different sections that will go into your critical design review and preliminary design review, such as the test planning, quality planning, and so on, and have this as part of your collaborative plan. Talking about collaboration, it does not end just with a collaboration. In fact, this is a live and dynamic environment that people can use on an ongoing basis to really assess the status of their quality. Okay, how many tests passed? Do we have any changes in the test plan? Did the requirements change? And if that's the case, what are the implications? What are the test cases that need to be retested, or what are the subsystems that need to be retested, and how? So this is a live, dynamic environment that really handles all the changes that you have, and that are part of our normal professional life, whether either the requirements change or we don't have access to a certain test bench, what do we need to do now, and so on. And this also allows management to have full visibility into what is happening from a quality point of view. It is really a solution that we all have to have in order to address the difficulty of communication in a distributed world. Now, we just talked about collaborative testability. Let's go deeper into this. Ido?
Sure. So if you have developers involved in the test process, there is an interesting benefit that test management can provide, which is pictured here in this slide. For all embedded devices, it can often be very difficult to test fault handlers or exception conditions, which happen at the edges or under special circumstances. It's especially difficult if you want to test these things automatically. So because it's hard to do, oftentimes this code goes untested, and the end users are the ones who discover the problem when those boundary conditions occur. For many of our customers, and particularly in the A&D space, 50% or more of the code is often devoted to exception handlers, and yet because it's so difficult to set up these conditions under which the exception handlers can be tested, this code is often the least well-tested. But with Wind River Test Management, we provide a new way that allows testers collaborating with developers to inject data or manipulate code in the software at runtime to simulate fault conditions so that they can be thoroughly tested. In that example we've pictured here, we have a device with an operating range that's specified at, say, 14 degrees Fahrenheit to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The device obviously has a temperature sensor, and there's an error handler that's supposed to take some action, maybe sound an audible warning if this is a safety-critical device, or maybe just turn on the fan to cool the device. Now, under normal conditions, when the temperature is below 100 degrees, the code simply runs down the left side. But how do you test what happens when the device gets too hot, when that error condition happens? This can be very difficult to set up to test. And we've actually had customers who in practice resort to putting a device in the oven or maybe blowing hot air from a hairdryer directly into the vent to simulate those conditions. But obviously those solutions are not practical or not scalable. In one of the previous slides, Moshe described an incident where an unmanned drone started flying autonomously in the direction of Washington, D.C. There was an error handler in this case that was supposed to detect the situation of loss of communication and take the drone in for a safe landing at its home base. But how do you properly test for such an error condition? Do you go out and physically try to mask the antenna that's relaying the signal to the drone in order for it to break the connectivity? Do you go and break off the antenna on a potentially million-dollar piece of equipment? Probably not. But with test management, we provide a way where developers can use a technology we call sensor points to inject faults in the device at runtime. So for example, in this case, a tester can simply arrange the value of the temp variable in the code to exceed 100 degrees. And he can do that on the fly while the device code is running, while it's running optimized production code. Now the code will simply exercise the error handler properly, and the testers can validate that the right behavior happens. This allows software to be much more thoroughly tested using automated techniques and get you to 100% code coverage.
Okay, another aspect that we just talked about is the traceability. And in fact, if you look at this little comment on the right side, are test requirements tied to verification requirements? And is there a method to ensure traceability of test requirements to the verification requirements? Well, this is one of the questions that you have to address when you go through a CDR. So it really proves that you had to demonstrate full traceability. It is not just that we had to demonstrate it, but this is really the most realistic way to identify untested requirements. The same with untested code. When we create these bidirectional links, if we have a requirement that is not tied to code or that is not tied to a test case, we know that this is not going to be tested. It goes the other way around as well. When we develop the code, human that it happens a lot that someone says, oh, if we just do this little change, then we can enable XYZ, which is not necessarily part of the requirements. But it is basically creating a new feature that just was added into the product. But this feature is not linked to any of the requirements, which means that no one is going to test it, no one is going to develop test cases for it. And this is what we always know as feature creep that may cause major crashes just because it is not going to be tested. So these bidirectional traceability links are really very important, and in fact we do have to report on them when we go through our reviews. This is also key to understand the impact of changes. So if we have some changes in the requirements, using these links we can see what is the impact, what is affected by these changes, which of the test suites needs to be rerun, needs to be modified. The same if there are some code changes. Let's say that you go from one bit to the next, something changed. Okay, how it is going to affect our test cases? How it goes back to the requirements? So these traceability links are really key to properly manage our own development process and, of course, the quality process as well. The other important aspect is that, okay, let me describe it differently. When I meet with people, with quality professionals, and I talk to their managers, and then I ask them about their testing strategy, too often I get an answer that is something like this. Well, we had a previous build, we had all these test cases, and now we have a major new feature, now we need to test it. So first we are going to run all the test cases that we have from the previous build, make sure that they run, just to get them out of the way, and then we will focus on the new build, on the new feature. And I want to scream, this is such a waste. Why do you need to run all the previous test cases just because you have them? If instead, besides, just think about the time it takes to run all these test cases, or even if we talk about regression tests and we run all of them, sometimes it may take weeks. It is just, it is becoming less and less realistic. Instead, let's take a look at all of your requirements and then break them to some that are critical and some that are less. Can we then identify the test cases which are associated with the critical requirements and run just those? In fact, this is what some projects do. And in some of them, they even go in a finer comb, and what they do is only the most critical requirements. So the top critical requirements, they create the minimal subset of test suites to address just those, and that's what they will run from one bit to the next. And from time to time, they will go and run the larger set. What it means is that all the trailing test cases that you see in this diagram, they may be run only once or twice in the whole testing life cycle, because their return is actually very low. Another approach that you'll see in consumer electronics, for example, is that they will go and run the test cases that will give them the highest return in terms of requirements coverage. They do not necessarily have critical requirements and non-critical, but they will have an association between the test cases and the coverage, and then they will try to run those that will give them the highest return from the point of view of the coverage, of the requirements that you are going to cover. Now, there are also other ways to define which are the test cases that you want to run. Ido, you want to elaborate on this?
Absolutely. So as Moshe says, when requirements and code change, there's an obvious impact on our test plans. With Wind River Test Management, you can greatly enhance your ability to perform an impact analysis and deal with the risks created by that change. Rather than running your entire test suite over and over again, even for minor changes, with Wind River Test Management, you can identify exactly which functions have changed. A good analogy is the redlining feature found in word processing software. Imagine you're reviewing a 90-page requirement document or a functional specification document which has just undergone some revision by a colleague. Surely you don't want to spend hours rereading the entire document looking for the changes that were made every time that someone has modified a single line. And this is exactly what the word processor's redline feature solves. It solves this problem by highlighting exactly those lines that were modified, new lines that were added, lines that were removed, so you can focus your attention just on the changes. Windriver Test Management does the exact same thing for application code. It highlights for you which functions are new in this build, which old functions were removed, and which functions were changed. Again, our impact analysis is performed on production code, and it helps optimize your test cycles. Using our mappings of test to code, we can then automatically construct an optimized test suite for you, comprised of only the tests that you need to run to validate those changes. And we're able to do that because we have an exact mapping of which code is touched by each one of our test cases. By automatically generating an optimized test suite with the minimum set of tests that are needed to cover just the changes, we provide two important benefits. One is we drastically cut down the time needed to run test cycles for small changes. This is especially valuable if you're adopting some form of agile methodology, whether or not you formally adopt agile methods. But if you have a process where you're constantly churning out builds with incremental small changes, you simply can't afford to spend days upon days of rerunning the entire inventory of test cases that you have just to validate the things that have changed. The second benefit is that we provide an insight into which areas of your code have gaps, gaps meaning that there are absolutely no tests associated with them. And this enables you to focus test development efforts on filling the gaps. So rather than creating tests that add only marginal coverage or no additional coverage at all, you can create tests that actually exercise the parts of your application that have not yet been covered. Now let's spend a few minutes going into the next level of detail for some of the capabilities I mentioned earlier that have to do with our ability to dynamically instrument running binary code. First, let's talk about finding untested software or test coverage. Again, working off of fully optimized production code without any debug information, without any special build, Windriver Test Management can map the functions inside your binary image to the test case that executes them. And it does that as the tests are running. This identifies untested functions in your code and highlights gaps in your test suite coverage. It also helps you find dead code, which should be removed, either because it's mandatory according to safety and security standards such as DL178B, or just because it's good software practice. Don't have any code that is not being exercised in your application. Because Windriver Test Management utilizes dynamic instrumentation of optimized code, you are testing the exact same code that you will eventually ship to your customers. With dynamic instrumentation, there is minimal overhead, the impact to performance is usually not even measurable, and there's no bloating of the code in memory. So whereas static instrumentation may be unusable for system testing because it skews performance measurements and often slows down the application to a point where the timing requirements are no longer met, or maybe just because they bloat the code to a point where it doesn't fit on the physically available memory, Windriver Test Management works just fine in those situations. It doesn't bloat the code, it doesn't impact performance at all. Speaking of performance, whether for diagnostic purposes or as part of a test or verification process, it's often desirable to understand the runtime performance at designated points within a running device. And there's really no good way to probe a running device and profile performance today unless you use something like our sensor point technology. We enable you to perform runtime performance profiling. You just select the list of functions that you would like to measure execution time for. And this could be in order for you to look for performance bottlenecks or to validate runtime performance, make sure that it complies with performance specifications. And then we will inject a very low impact test point that will measure the function performance under the test suite load at runtime. The system will then gather the resulting data and display it in a graphical dashboard for easy analysis. And we can do this on a build-by-build basis, so we avoid the common situation where everything seems to work just fine in one of the first builds, and then performance slowly degrades until the time when we go from build number 1 to build number 40. Everything is now very, very slow, but we have no idea where to look for the slowdowns. With Windriver Test Management, we easily pinpoint for you exactly which functions have those performance slowdowns. Windriver Test Management itself is a server-based system that you can add into your current test environment to improve your device test execution and runtime feedback. It can be accessed by both testers, developers, or even managers because it's got a web-based interface that enables you to access all of its functionality through any browser. It provides you with an open interface that can interoperate with your existing test systems or your existing build systems or your configuration management systems. And it is very easy to extend this capability through the use of a complete full-featured command line interface called TMCLI. It collects the information from the devices under test, including the ability to gather any logs that are generated by those devices and import them back into the database where everything is stored in a central location. Everything we've talked about so far implicitly assumes that we actually have the board in front of us for us to test the device. But in another offering from Wind River is called Simix, which is a full system simulator, which enables you to do all these things, all this dynamic analysis, even before you actually create the physical board. Using Simix, you can simulate your system in its entirety, CPU, input-output, network latencies, and so on, and conduct all of your tests exactly as you would on the real system months before it is even available for testing purposes. Wind River Test Management supports not just the execution of automated test scripts or C code, it also smoothly integrates both automated tests and manual tests. You can use the system to easily step through any manual tests you have. We make it very simple for you to import existing manual tests that are typically stored in, say, Microsoft Word documents and automatically have them converted into a Wind River Test Management test that is stored in a centralized database. You can then run the test still manually, step by step with a human operator, but have all the results collected and stored and available for analysis as if this was another one of your automated tests.
Okay, and for reporting, because you know there is no quality project that does not need to create reports. So it is really very important that when we talk, when we talk about the reports, that we don't just look at reports for different tools that we're using for testing or different types of testing. It is really important to create a consolidated view of the status of the testing, the status of the quality, both for the practitioners as well as for managers. And it is also very important that these reports will be actionable so that we can identify trends and then respond to this. So in order to do this, we need to have a unified test execution database where we can see all the logs, all the test coverage, all the traceability that we talked before, what we have used from our lab. Once that we have this, we probably want to look at trends between one run and another one, if it is between between sprints, if we are agile or agile-like, or even across projects, because this will then give us a lot more visibility into our into the quality of our testing process, and that's what is going to help us improve the overall process. So looking at these trends within a project and across projects, where you include historical data, is one of the key things that you need to have in order to be able to get or to improve your maturity and get to the point where you're not just focusing on the automation, but also in the prevention of defects and then to optimize your process. Of course, the reports are also important because in many times this is how we get paid. We had to create these reports, and therefore it is important to be able to customize them. And the customization, the trends, and the unified execution database is indeed part of what we are now jointly offering. Okay, another aspect that has a lot of cost implications is smart defect management. In fact, what we found through GBS, which is the part of or one part of IBM that that focuses on services, and here we looked at over 800 different projects, what we saw is that hidden source of waste is when there is a defect, and this defect is being reported many times. If you think about how this could happen, you know, you may have several test cases, test scenarios, and some of the and some of these test scenarios need to go through a similar type of setup. And let's assume that there is a defect just when you go through this setup. Therefore, several test scenarios will then run through this defect, which means that you may have multiple testing teams across different organizations, maybe, that will go into this defect, and then they're all going to report it. And then it is going to cause several teams in a development trying to identify this defect, only then to find out that, oh, it is the one that was already reported by XYZ X time ago. And this is really a major source of waste. And what we have added into RQM is the ability to identify cases like this, and then it will tell the tester, hey, we already saw a report that says XYZ. Do you want to enter a new report, or you want to consolidate them, merge them, or maybe just move on? With this simple capability, we actually found that it saves a lot of money and a lot of frustration in the interaction between testers and developers. Now, there is also another aspect of defect management that Ido will elaborate on.
Sure. So on the Wind River side, test management provides an integration with defect tracking systems, which enables an intelligent bidirectional connection between test cases and the defects associated with them. That's a given. But once a defect is found, the unique thing about test management is that it provides an environment in which it is very easy for testers to gather additional application data and additional statuses and do that dynamically at runtime, which helps to isolate and reproduce defects. Think of it as the ability to introduce into your application code a random printf that will produce the value of any given variable at any point in time, at any line of code, even when you didn't anticipate the need to produce its value when you were programming. With the sensor point technology, we can actually insert a patch piece of code that will enable you to collect that type of diagnostic information, and that means that you can collect all that detail without requiring application rebuilds or without requiring even access to the source code, greatly shortening this resolution of defect cycle. So we spent some time talking about the various best practices that were enabled by this joint solution, but the bottom line, what does all this mean for you? Let's take a look at a ROI analysis. As we discussed, RQM together with Wind River Test Management provides an end-to-end quality management solution for software for A&D applications. And working together, this solution delivers a collaborative environment for test planning, which is integrated with requirements. It provides a universal test execution platform that will run any test either on host or in remote mode. It will provide you with runtime diagnostic information, as I just described, and it will complete the defect resolution workflow. So how does such a solution impact the project quality, and how does it impact the bottom line? I'll let Moshe cover some detailed quantitative studies that were done by IBM to analyze the return on the investment here.
Okay, cool. So really the question is now, what does it mean to your bottom line? Okay, if you look at this chart here, let's talk about projects that are at different levels of maturity. We're using here CMMI, but it is not really critical. Basically, the idea is that one is the least mature, five is the most mature. Since most of the industry is around level two, let's focus on the numbers here. Okay, the blue bar says 30% for level two. What it means is that if you are at CMMI level 2, then you are going to find about 30% of your defects, which means that that from 10 defects, you're going to find 3, 7 will go out. However, if you follow these best practices that we just discussed here today, you're going to find 58% of your defects, meaning that from 10, you're going to find, let's round the number, you're going to find 6. Now look at the difference. Before, you're going to find 3 and ship 7. With the best practices, you are going to find six and ship only four. From the quality point of view, this already makes a big impact. But there is also a financial impact. Because let's now correlate this with the table that you see on the right side here. So let's assume for a moment that you have, okay, you are at TMR level 2, and you're going to find 1,000 defects for your testing. So what this means, based on the numbers that we just saw before, is that if you find 1,000 defects, the total number of defects that you have in your system is 3,300. Right? It is 100 divided by 30%. Now, if you follow these best practices, and you have 3,300 defects, it means that you're going to find now 1,914. So this is 914 defects more due to these best practices. Now let's apply the numbers that you see on the table on the right, and you may have your own numbers, but you know they are not very different. From all the different sources that I've seen, the numbers are around the same. So now you apply the cost factor for what it means that you're going to find 914 defects earlier and fix them earlier. This means that you're going to save over $500,000 just here. Now, this is across the whole industry. And this is for a case where you have only 1,000 defects. In real life, we have much more. So now think about what it means to your project. It is a huge saving. So this is how you, on one hand, we see that you can improve your quality, but at the same time, you also save a lot of money. So to summarize it, now you see that you can improve or you can optimize your business outcomes. You can close the gap between the top left side of the V and the right side of the V and then balance cost, time, quality, and risk. And basically the trick to do it is really push this green curve down and to the left by doing by taking steps that will really eliminate the risk. And of course, you want to deal with the high risk items first and then go from there. And that's how you squeeze the curve. That's how you can improve the quality and at the same time reduce your cost. While you do this, you want to be, or you want to take a solution that is very device aware, meaning that at any point on the right side of the V, when there is a problem, there is a defect, you don't want to waste too much time in trying to figure out what's wrong. You want to be able to go straight down into the bowels of your device and analyze your defect, communicate in the most effective way to the developers so that it will not take them too long to find out the defect and move on. Again, this is how then you can reduce your cost of testing and improve your quality. And I think that with this, we have 10 minutes left, so we're just on time, and let's open this for questions. So, John, to you, please.
Thank you very much, Moshe, and Io as well. Excellent presentation. And now we're going to turn over to our question and answer session. And if you haven't submitted a question, please go ahead and do so. And while you, the audience is doing that, I will start with our first question, not for any specific speaker. But it is, you talked about extending testing to quality management. Does it support testers being involved earlier in the development process? Who would like to take that question?
That's a good question. Yes, of course. In fact, one of the collaborative aspects of test planning is to allow the testers to do at least the initial test planning as you're also analyzing the requirements. Sometimes it is even before you have the architect involved, because this will allow you to think about the requirements from the testing point of view, come up with the test planning. Some will even push it into high-level test scenarios. In fact, this is one of the most successful ways to make sure that your requirements are testable. You know, we often get requirements from our customer, and then when we try to understand them, we have to convert them to something else, to more technical requirements. And this is definitely a place where testers can help a lot because they will think about this from the point of view of how am I going to test it. Then they will come up with their own scenarios. Usually you'll take this back to your customer and say, is this what you want us to deliver? Is this what you meant? So, yeah, that's a very good question. And in fact, this really allows for early participation of the testers to, A, make sure that the requirements are well understood. Second, that they are testable. Third, you can deliver this to your developers. And as they develop their own unit test, and as they go through their own iterations, they will be able to use these early test cases to do their own early testing. And then when it comes to the QA team, they will already get something that is at a better quality just because they already ran these test cases on their own.
Thank you, Moshe. You don't want to add anything, or move on to the next question?
I think we can move on to the next question. Moshe handled this very well.
Thank you. Next question. Why does the testing maturity go down over time on slide number 16?
I'll take this one. So it actually does not go down. I think it's just a matter of the line on the graph not being properly labeled. What it's showing is the distribution of organizations along this product maturity, and it follows a pretty much a normal distribution where most of the organizations are somewhere in the middle of the maturity curve. But as you move further to the right and move to the higher echelons of maturity, fewer and fewer organizations are actually able to meet those the criteria required for those stages.
Yeah, you're right. It is a distribution curve, and most of the industry today is between the proactive and the repeatable testing process.
Thank you. Next question. Please keep those questions coming in. You present here an integration between Rational and Wind River. We are also using RQM, and it looks like some of the things we do with RQM can also be done with Wind River. So how does it work?
Okay, I'll take this one. Okay, the way it works is that there are many different activities that can be done either from the Wind River test management solution or from RQM. So if you do them, let's say, from RQM, it will propagate automatically into Wind River. So when you look at the Wind River test management solution, you will see there, for example, the high-level test cases, as if they were entered within Wind River. If it is done the other way around, it will propagate into RQM, and then you'll see it as if it is from there. So these two tools are really integrated so that it doesn't really matter if you do something from one tool or the other. The point is that some people will work at a higher level. They will be more concerned about the integration with the rest of the lifecycle. And in this case, RQM is the more natural tool. But whatever needs to be communicated to those who are going to define the test cases will pass into the Wind River tool. If you are a test practitioner and you are using the Wind River tool all the time, but you want to see, for example, the links to the requirements, then again, it is a transparent. So that it doesn't really matter where you do what, you have full visibility from either tool, and you choose which tool you use based on what is your focus. You want to add something, Ido?
Ido?
You want to add something? Okay, guess not.
Okay, thank you very much, Moshe. I have a question for you as we're getting close to the end of the presentation. Where do you see all this testing and all the work you guys are doing 5 years, 10 years down the road? Can you give a kind of a closing statement if you want, if you'd like, kind of sum up where you see everything?
Okay. Well, we talked about manual testing. Is that this is one of the points that Ido was talking about? The interesting thing is that when we look at testing from the point of view of cost, where labor is spent, what we see is about 80% of testing is actually manual. Five, 10 years ago, we all thought that if we are going to automate all the testing, then we'll be in a great place. But it turns out that it is not that simple. While it is important to automate the test cases which are going to provide us a high return, which are going to address the critical requirements, for example, still most of the testing is done in a way that is very manual. I think that looking down the road, I don't know if it is 10 years, but 2, 3, maybe 5 years, What we will see is more and more support for more effective manual testing. For example, being able to read the requirements and from this to semi-automatically generate at least high-level test cases. There are some attempts today to do this directly by looking at use case diagrams or sequence diagrams, and this can provide us at least a push to a situation where we create a small set of test cases which are going to provide us with a high coverage. This is not going to be the only set of test cases that we will run, but we can quickly create a set that has a relatively high return. Once we run this, then the trick is really to make the manual testing more efficient, not necessarily by fully automating it, by making it fully automated, but more semi-automated, assisting the manual testing, just because this is where about 80% of the cost and the time is spent today.
Thanks, Moshe. Ido, we got you back. Did you want to add anything to...
I apologize. I got dropped off earlier, so I didn't hear the first part of Moshe's answer, but I assume that you did address the question of how we map test the functions in terms of the technology. If not, I'll be happy to go into that.
This was part of it, but please go ahead.
Sure. So this goes back again to the core technology that Wind River Test Manager provides, which is dynamic instrumentation of code. We have the ability to analyze your binary and to insert a very low-impact sensor point at the beginning and at the exit of each one of your functions and each one of your blocks of code. Once the test is running, that sensor point is called. It ticks off that function as being covered, or it ticks off that block as being covered, and then it's removed so that you no longer incur the performance impact of that function while preserving this mapping between what the test did and which functions and blocks in the code it executed.
Okay, thank you, Ido. So we'll move on to the next question from the audience. Can you elaborate on how to map tests to functions in code? Have you guys kind of already answered that with the...
Yeah, I think I just answered that particular question.
Okay. Next question. Can these tools integrate with other coding solutions besides Wind Rivers? For our simulations, we typically use Linux. While we use IBM Rational tools, including ClearCase and Doors for requirements, we also use other embedded solutions such as Greenhill's Integrity for flight code. Our design may be in RSA rather than Rhapsody. What parts of these pieces are supported, and how can things go together if all the components supported are not present? Who would like to take that?
I can certainly take a first stab at that question. So all the non-dynamic instrumentation capabilities of Wind River Test Management, the basic automated testing framework, the open test execution engine, the virtual lab management solution, the centralized repository that helps you with test planning, all of those are completely platform independent and will work with whatever you have and will also easily integrate with them using our command line interface. The dynamic instrumentation capability is limited to certain platforms that we support today. So it runs today on top of Wind River Linux. It runs on top of other Linux distributions, not necessarily those from Wind River, so long as they have the 2.6 Linux kernel or higher. And it obviously runs on top of Wind River's VxWorks. And they work for applications that are written and compiled in C or C++. If you're using a different operating system or a different compiler, let's say you mentioned Green Hills, we can certainly create a port of this application to support your system. We'll have to negotiate a specific engineering cost to do that. There's nothing inherent in the technology that limits it to just Wind River operating systems or to just Linux operating systems, but we haven't done that yet because we have not seen enough market demand.
And on the Rhapsody side, with Rhapsody, what you get is links to model-based testing. We did not really go into details on model-based testing in this presentation today. So, in fact, if you don't use Rhapsody, that's what you're going to lose. But all the things that we discussed here today will apply to RSA as well.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. And now I move on to our last question.
are RQM and WRTM integrated using OSLC?
Simple answer, yes.
Okay. do you want to make it complicated, or are we just going to go with a simple answer? Yes?
Yeah, this
okay.
is a simple answer. It is yes. Yep.
Okay. Excellent.
It's OSLC version 1.
Well, that brings us right to our time limit for today. Perfect timing. I'd like to thank our presenters from Wind River and IBM Rational, and all of you who followed along remotely today. As I mentioned at the beginning, we may have not have had time to address all the questions, and as appropriate, someone may get back to you offline. These TCasts will be posted online today, and note that an audio-only podcast version also will be available. On your screen, you should be able to find the contact information in terms of email for our speakers. Thank you all for attending. Look forward to seeing you on future webcasts, ECAS at Open Systems. Goodbye.